Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Neuro Experience podcast. I'm Louisa. I'm the host. Today's episode is focused on male hormone optimization with my guest, Saad Alam. Saad is the co-founder of Hone Health, the premier men's optimization clinic that helps men get their spark back and be their best selves. Today, we're going to be diving into testosterone. So I know there's a lot of noise on social media right now pertaining to the global decline in testosterone for males. And while social media can provide a great source of information, there's also a lot of misinformation. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about behavioral tools, nutrition, exercise, supplementation, and prescription-based tools and their interactions for determining overall levels of testosterone. I know you're going to love this episode. And if you haven't done so yet, please go through and click subscribe wherever you listen to this. We're available on all major podcast platforms. And now we also have a YouTube channel. So go through, and if you are a visual person and you want to check these episodes out and watch them, you can go and do that. Let's get into it. Hey team, real quick, I get asked often where I get my supplements from. I know I do a lot of content around creatine and omega-3 fatty acids. I get all of my supplements from Momentus. I've been partnered with Momentus for quite some time now for many reasons. First of all, the quality of their supplements are second to none in terms of purity and precision in the amount of the ingredients. Quality is by far the most important aspect when choosing any type of supplement. Secondly, I know that I have an audience in Australia and in the US, and Momentus ships internationally. Thirdly, Momentus uses lab-tested ingredients, and all of their products are triple certified by third-party testing. So together with Momentus, I'm going to be building out protocols for brain health and working on many different ways to bring a healthy and quality supplement regime to you. If you want to go through and get these products or check out what I recommend, go to livemomentus.com/neuro. This is where you'll see all of my recommended supplements for brain health and obviously sleep health. You'll also get a very big discount when you do so. So that is livemomentus.com/neuro. This episode is brought to you by Hone Health. Men hit some type of wall the older that they get. This can be plateauing in the gym, losing their daily drive at the office, or maybe just having a lack of energy at the end of the day to do the things that they enjoy most. The truth is, over 30 million men in the US suffer from hormone imbalances that are severely limiting their potential the older they get. That decline can actually become an incline. Now, with therapies that are FDA approved, such as hormone replacement therapy and TRT, it's now been made possible with Hone Health. Today's episode, you'll learn how you can optimize your testosterone levels. And if this is something that you are interested in, you can go through and order Hone's easy to use at home assessment test today to learn what your testosterone levels are and how to optimize them. And Hone is giving my audience something really special. You guys can go and get an at-home testing kit done, and you can also get a doctor's consultation done for only $45. Just go to honehealth.com/neuro to take advantage of this offer. Saad, how you doing?
I actually couldn't be more excited. I was just telling you this. I feel like it's been 6 months in the making before we finally got in this chair and had this conversation.
Yeah, it's the reason why I've been waiting this long is because I've been doing my own research when it comes to hormones, hormone optimization. Evidently, I am a female born and raised, so I've been focusing mainly on the female hormone optimization. And if you have a look back at some of our episodes, we've kind of been veering in that direction. But today, we're going to be speaking all about testosterone. We're going to talk about male hormone optimization. And I'm going to start with this quote, if I can. The huge percentage drop in male testosterone levels over the past few decades is real and very noticeable, both visually and in terms of behavior. We have a 1% reduction per year. I strongly suspect that we are only just at the beginning of the ripple effects that's about to come. According to a study published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, the average 22-year-old male today has an average testosterone level roughly equal to that of a 60-year-old man. So why don't we start by first understanding why we're seeing a massive decline in testosterone?
First, that's terrifying.
I know.
Like, let's actually just repeat that. A man in their 20s today has the testosterone levels of a man in their 60s, late 60s today. That's terrifying.
It's sickening.
So I wish I could give you a straightforward answer that was just, this is the exact reason, but let me give you the reason why it's multifaceted, and then I'm going to tell you why, what is the largest driver of it. So the first is, there are a lot of things that naturally improve our testosterone levels. Getting out in the sun, lifting heavy weights, eating right, not drinking, not smoking, making sure you have the right mental health in place. And so, also obesity. If you tend to be a little bit obese because your body produces more estrogen, that actually lowers your testosterone level overall. Now, when you actually control for all of those factors, and this is going to sound a little bit conspiratorial, what we begin to find is that when you look at the plastics, the fertilizers, the phthalates, the pesticides in our food and our drinking water, what we call endocrine disrupting chemicals, they really are responsible for what is driving men's testosterone levels, or it's a hormone levels overall, to be so much lower over the past three decades.
So you're saying that the way that we are as a society, with the introduction of social media, for example, it is now causing us to be inside on video games, okay, which is causing us to be less active, less time out in the sun. And obviously, you just said lifting weights as well. We're seeing a decline in that.
There, all of that definitely contributes to it. Like, here's a great way to think about it. What do we do before we go to sleep? Fine. We sit on our phones, right? This blue light from the phone, it disrupts our natural circadian rhythm. If we don't sleep right, our body doesn't operate the same way. And so all of those things have these factors that definitely help reduce our testosterone levels because our body isn't operating as efficiently. But really, and here's another interesting fact, when you look at the hormone levels of men in large urban areas where there are more of these EDCs, these endocrine disrupting chemicals, they are lower than in rural places in the country, and not even in the country, globally.
So a person living, a male living in New York would have a lower testosterone level at age 27 compared to somebody living in rural America, age
Iowa.
27.
Iowa. Yep.
So where do you think that, like, are we seeing, is this a public health concern? Because I'm seeing like a lot of people talking about it now on social media, albeit some people probably aren't spitting out the right information. But is this now like a, can we call it a pandemic in itself?
Okay. So here's the reality, right? This topic is incredibly stigmatized. No one wants to admit it because it usually starts like this. I feel like less of a man. And no one wants to start that conversation. And no one knows how to even have that conversation with their physicians. Now, to your point, is it a pandemic? 100% absolutely. Now, there's two sides to that pandemic, right? There is the, I have a low testosterone level, and that makes me have less grip strength. That makes me feel a little bit more tired. I have a little bit less mental acuity. Then there's the other side of this equation. This number is going to blow you away too. When you look at men three decades ago, they had 50% more sperm. 50. Hold on. In 30 years, the total amount of sperm a man is producing has gone down by 50%. There was a peer-reviewed study that recently came out that said men by 2030, 7 years away, will be unable to have children unassisted. Now, let's say that's a little bit exaggerated. Let's even say it's 2050 or 2060 that men will be unable to have children unassisted. That's terrifying. And when I think about the fact that all of my friends and I were late 30s, early 40s, we're all having trouble conceiving, we're all having energy problems, this is just the beginning of a global epidemic of massive proportions. Like, have you ever seen The Handmaid's Tale? Right? Exactly the same scenario. Men cannot produce children because their sperm is not viable. And that causes a bunch of really bad problems downstream.
Tell me about why you think that it starts with a man being able to just speak openly about it. What would he be feeling? Let's just say you're a 32-year-old male and you may be feeling intimidated to talk to your physician. What are some of the things that they're feeling?
Can I use myself as an example?
Sure.
Because I went through this personally. So the first thing that happened was I noticed I stopped waking up one time in the morning. And that's not a big deal, right? You sleep in an hour here. You generally say, you know what? Maybe I was a little bit stressed. So that happens first. And then all of a sudden you're sitting around and then you're like, what was that thing? Wait, what was that thing? Or you're saying to yourself, well, 2 + 2 = 4 times 5. Is it 20 or 22? You find your brain kind of doesn't have the same intellectual horsepower it does. And then you can kind of just chalk it up to maybe life is just a little bit busy. Now, once that goes on for a couple months, right, the energy levels decrease, the mental acuity and stamina stops, then you start noticing yourself gaining a bunch of weight. And if you were like me, who was obsessively working out, and you start to see these love handles forming, or you start to see the skin on your face starting to actually hang a little bit, you're like, well, man, something doesn't look right. And then once you realize your libido's gone, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, it was really difficult. My girlfriend and I, my now fiance, I couldn't even perform, right? And I don't mean to get too like what I'll call personal, but here's the reality, right? Like you go into the bedroom, you want to be intimate, and all of a sudden it's like, well, failure to lift off, right? And what does that conversation sound like? I swear to God, like, I love you so much. It's not me.
Why isn't he attracted to me? Why doesn't he love me? Is he sleeping with somebody else?
Hold on. That's the big one. And what does that one sound like? No, it's not you. It's me. That sounds like the biggest cliche.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, for me, I've been an overly excitable, I would say energetic person my entire life. All of a sudden, I start to feel depressed. Mm. Now, let's combine all those things. Not sleeping well, which will lead to its own problems. All of a sudden, you can't think well. You're gaining weight. You can't perform for the person that you love. And then all of a sudden, you start to feel sad. This self-defeating negative feedback cycle starts where you start questioning yourself. And for me, it was around the time of 35. And that's when my father got type 2 diabetes, which turned into type 1 diabetes, which turned into kidney disease, which turned into strokes, which eventually turned into his death. And right, and I saw this man tether himself up to a dialysis machine 3 times a week. You never want to live that. And he was one of the bravest guys. But I've said, I'm not going to let myself get there. And so now think about all those things. And on top of the fact, you have to provide, you've got to go out to work, you've got to make sure that you bring in money, take care of the expenses. And all of a sudden, you're like, shit, like I am terrified of what is happening to myself as a man. So now where do you go? You don't go to your partner or spouse, right? Because the conversation is, something's wrong with me. I feel like less of a man. You don't go to your friends, because all your friends, you're kind of like, hey, look, everything's good. Everything's perfectly fine. You go to your physician. How do you start that conversation? I feel a little bit tired. Well, what does that mean? Or, you know what? I'm feeling a little depressed. Let me give you an antidepressant. And so the reality is that there is no safe way to start this conversation other than just jumping into it, right? You need to go out there, you need to be incredibly vulnerable and just say, these are the problems I'm facing. Now, to your point, one of the most exciting things about this particular moment, even though it's a relatively unfortunate time, you've got people like yourself, you've got Atiya Huberman, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, Dr. David Sinclair, all of a sudden starting to say, hey, this is a real problem. And by the way, you shouldn't be ashamed of this. It's not only happening for men, but guess what? There's this problem happening for women as well, too.
Wow. Okay. People want to be better. Okay. Mm-hmm. I solely believe that there are men listening to this thinking, this sounds like me. So we are now going to go all the way back and do a crash course, if you will. I think there's a lot of information now available on Instagram, social media. Many people are talking about the realm of testosterone, but I think we don't, you know, a lot of people still don't really understand, like, what is it as a hormone? What exactly is it? Where is it produced? How do I produce it more endogenously? That means within the body rather than taking it exogenously with, you know, outside of the body. And how can I optimize it? So why don't we start there? And for the purpose of the episode, guys, we'll start by just talking about like natural ways of producing testosterone.
Okay. So the first thing is both men and women have testosterone. Important to know that. Imagine that on your cell, you have hundreds of different receptors for testosterone, meaning there are so many different functions it serves in your body. For men, yes, does it produce more hair? Yes, does it give you more masculine characteristics? But the other really important things are, it helps you think better. It gives you, and Dr. Huberman talks about this all the time, it gives you this motivation to want to do hard work, which is really interesting. It gives you the ability to produce stronger bones. It decreases dementia over the longer course of time. It actually makes sure it regulates your hormone cycle so you don't become insulin resistant. Like there are a lot of different things that it does in your body. So where is it produced? Let me take another step back and kind of talk about, and I don't know if you can put a little chart up on here, but so imagine we've got a little temperature. Let me take another step back. This thing here is called your hypothalamus and your pituitary. It's like a little kind of temperature regulator that sits in the base of your brain. Now imagine that temperature regulator, it senses what's going on in your body, and based upon what's going on in your body, it sends a signal down to your testes. And for male, that signal is modulated by something called LH, luteinizing hormone. So luteinizing hormone travels down to your testes, it finds these cells, it gives them a high five, and this says, hey guys, produce testosterone. So then your testes produce testosterone for your body to consume. Now there's some portion of that testosterone that gets bound up by other hormones. They basically grab onto it and they say, hey, look, we're going to spend time with you. We're not going to let the rest of our body use you. So the bioavailability of that testosterone actually decreases a little bit. And so there's another number you have that's important. It's called your free testosterone level. And that is what is allowed to do useful things in your body. Some of that testosterone converts into estrogen. So then you have two different hormones traveling in your body. You've got estrogen and you've got this free testosterone that hits your temperature regulator here in the top of your brain and basically tell it to either increase or decrease your total testosterone. Now, go ahead.
It's interesting that you know, I often refer to the hypothalamus as Grand Central Station. It is because, you know, you go to Grand Central, it's this hub, but you can go a million different ways. And that's what the hypothalamus does. So it's like a Grand Central Station. One thing that I just want to ask is you keep saying temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So are we talking about if you get really hot, if you get really cold, it produces various amounts of testosterone?
I am so happy. And maybe temperature is the wrong word to use. And I love the way that you use Grand Central Station because it really is kind of like a bunch of things are happening in your body. And this is sensing what's happening in your body. And based upon that, it's telling what trains to leave on time.
Yeah.
Right. So it really isn't if you feel hot, your hypothalamus and your pituitary saying produce more testosterone. It's really saying how much of that other hormone is in your body. And based upon that, let me tell what other trains to run.
Okay, right. So the beginning of then this low testosterone begins in the hypothalamus?
Well, that's a little bit more. There's what they call primary hypogonadism.
Yeah.
And there's called secondary hypogonadism.
And hypo is low.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And gonadism means low testosterone for all intents and purposes.
Okay.
Now, one form of low testosterone is because the signal or the train running from Grand Central in your brain down to your testes is not running. And the other one is, hey, your testes are actually broken a little bit. And no matter how much of that train or that signal runs, they're just not going to produce a whole lot more testosterone.
Right. Okay. That's very interesting. So then is it because I'm still trying to understand what blocks, like what tells the train not to go?
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about young men very specifically, right? So all of these endocrine disrupting chemicals.
Actually, that was going to be my next question.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask it then if we're going to get into this, because it's interesting. Because when researching the episode, I read also that environmental contaminants play a role in the decline in testosterone. Glyphosate, which is the primary chemical compound found in Roundup, which is the most widely used herbicide in the United States, has been shown to reduce testosterone levels, alter testicular structure, kill testosterone-producing Leydig cells, and interfere with pubertal development. Then you've got atrazine, the second most widely used herbicide in the United States, also significantly lowers testosterone, but even more alarming has been shown to cause testicular deformities and hermaphroditism in amphibians. That was a direct quote. Again, that wasn't from me. However, we have a real problem on our hand if we're now dealing with glyphosate, which is lowering testosterone.
I mean, I'm going to have a sip of my water really quickly here.
Yeah.
And I almost say that jokingly because there's a high probability that this water has some of that in it.
Don't tell me that.
This is terrifying.
I need Evian to sponsor me now.
For glass water bottles. That's it. I'll tell you, it really is scary when you think about the very simple fact that everything we're doing is probably, at least for a man, poisoning our body to a certain extent. And we live here in New York City. The moment we walk outside, from the second we start breathing, I mean, it is all of a sudden just racing into our body and causing all of these micro problems. Now, what they're actually doing longer term is even scarier. But in the near term, they are lowering our testosterone levels. Now, let's get back to really quickly, what does that do for a younger guy endogenously? A lot of those chemicals, they resemble estrogen. Now, if Grand Central basically understands when there's too much estrogen in our body to stop the trains from moving, the trains stop moving. So let's go back to this analogy. Grand Central understands what's happening in the body. It sends a train from our brain down to our testes. Our testes produce testosterone. Mm-hmm. Testosterone then does a bunch of useful things in the body, and some of it converts into estrogen.
Yep.
If there's too much estrogen in our body, it tells Grand Central, hey, stop the trains from running, slow them down a little bit. Now, what happens is when you're out in the environment and you have these EDCs in your body and they resemble estrogen, Grand Central thinks there's way too much estrogen in your bodies, and so it stops the train from running to your testes in order for them to produce testosterone.
So, okay, so we're getting too much estrogen, and then that is obviously, am I butchering it if I say that this may be turning men into women?
that's such a loaded comment, though, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a strong statement to say it's turning men into women. I think that because there's less testosterone in your body, there are certain set of characteristics that are not necessarily coming out. And there are other characteristics that are probably being developed a little bit more, right? Like, I would probably argue maybe men are more emotive, or they're maybe more in touch with their emotions right now versus they weren't previously.
Okay. So basically the way to understand it for most people would be like, first of all, what's really great with what you've said is it is on somewhat not the male's fault. We are now living in a world where we've got all of these endocrine disruptors. You know, we're drinking from plastic, glyphosate, the food system is just horrific. Okay, we know that. Mm-hmm. We're already being attacked. And I say this for the brain as well. Just living in the US alone increases your rate by around 33% of getting cognitive decline and neurodegenerative diseases.
Yep.
Okay. 100%. So we know that we're already at an attack. So what is, okay, a lot of guys now are using testosterone therapy, replacement therapy, so-called TRT. I'd love to frame up what this is by first defining out the terms, because like I said, we need to define what these terms are. So if someone then is like, okay, I've got low testosterone, I know that my testosterone levels are low. People are now taking exogenous testosterone. What does that mean?
I'm going to complicate this a little bit, just because I want to make sure that we understand the nuance of what it means to have low testosterone. If you have low testosterone because the train isn't running from Grand Central to your testes and basically telling them to produce more testosterone, we can give you a medication. It's very often something that women use for fertility treatment called Clomid. And that, or HCG, that medication basically says, hey, look, let's have more of those trains run. Now, very often, that's the first line of treatment. And let me actually take another step back there too. You actually want to make sure you are doing a bunch of things naturally. Okay. You want to make sure you are sleeping right.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that you are not eating refined carbs. You want to make sure that you are exercising. You want to make sure you're not smoking. You want to make sure you're not drinking. You want to make sure that you are actually practicing mindfulness techniques. So you're managing your stress. If you have done all of those.
So first line of defense, you go to the doctor, okay?
Yep.
You've had blood work done.
Mm-hmm.
What's the average reading then? What's a lab value for a male? Where should he be in the range?
Okay. So the range is 300 to 900 nanograms per deciliter. So
for a young male, what's that age, 25 to 40?
Technically, the range is a little bit archaic. That is a true statement. It is not an age dependent range.
Okay.
Basically, it just says if you are between 300 and 900, regardless of what age you are, you're fine. That's actually bullshit. And here's the reason why. A 25-year-old male probably has a 700 to 750 testosterone range. Now, and a 65-year-old male probably operates 450, 500. The range basically says is, if you are 25 and you are at 301, you're in range. That's not true. You are probably on the lower end of the range, but the reality is that range is a population-dependent curve, and it doesn't take advantage of the fact that there are a lot of people that fall outside of that normal distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at that number, you also have to look at the symptoms someone's having. So basically, I'm a great example. When my testosterone was low, I was at 180 nanograms per deciliter, and I had all the symptoms that went with it, clearly outside of the range.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I went on treatment—
That's very low.
Hold on. Incredibly low. My doctors were shocked I was walking around at that point.
Yeah. Time. Were you crying when you were walking around?
I felt sad. I felt sad. Was I crying? Maybe a little bit more than normal, but I felt really, can I swear?
Yeah.
I felt really fucking sad,
yeah.
Right? That's just the best way to describe it. Now, I went on treatment.
Yeah.
I went to 400. I felt much better.
So the doctor said to you, the first line of defense is not exercise, sleep, and nutrition. It is, let's put you straight onto it.
No, okay. Actually, the first line is always.
Yes.
Are you making sure you are taking care of your life? Always. Now, there is a caveat to that. If you are morbidly obese, maybe you're 450 pounds and you're 6 feet, you just may not have the motivation to do a lot of those things because they require energy from you. So a physician may actually put you on treatment right away and monitor you closely to say, let me give you some more energy back in your life so you can eat better. So you can exercise a little bit more. But those are kind of like rare cases. In general, the first line of defense is always, are you taking care of yourself?
Okay, good.
If you are not taking care of yourself, guess what? You shouldn't be treated. You should fix these things first.
Yeah.
The next line will always be, how old are you? If you are, let's call it, below 40 years old and you want to maintain your fertility, you really want to have children in the future, you then try one of these drugs, Clomid or HCG. They basically tell your body to naturally produce more testosterone by telling that train from Grand Central to run to your testes a little bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
If you take one of those medications and that doesn't continue to increase your testosterone level, then it means that the machinery down in your testes probably has deteriorated to a point where it's just not producing testosterone or capable of it. And only at that point do you say, I'm going to try exogenous testosterone.
Okay. So when you started taking testosterone, what happened to you?
So I went from 180, I took Clomid.
Yep.
Clomid is like a 2 to 3 month, very gentle process where my brain, or I should say Grand Central, sent more trains down to my testes.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically said, produce more testosterone.
It seems as though there's a, I keep cutting in because it's interesting, the analogies. It seems as though it's a two-part highway. You've got highway number one, which is hypothalamus down to testes. Yep. We're going to try and fix that first, but that's not the end of the road. That's the first highway.
Yep.
Then we go to the second one. Then we need to also make sure that the testes are capable.
Yep.
Okay. Great.
And very often you can probably bifurcate that path a little bit more. If you were younger, there's a much higher probability that that highway is going to work.
Yes, obviously.
If you were older, because your body starts naturally deteriorating over time, there's a higher probability that that highway is not going to work, or it's not going to be operational, and you've got to go to the second one.
Okay. All right. So let's go back to Clomid.
Okay. So I first started taking Clomid. And by the way, keep in mind, I was sleeping perfectly. I was taking care of myself. I was meditating twice a day. So I already had all that stuff. Box was checked. So then I started taking Clomid. 3 months in, about a month in, I started noticing I was sleeping better. I started noticing because I was sleeping better, I had a little bit more energy. And then I started noticing, you know what? Maybe I'm a little bit happier about 2 months in. Then around the third month, I noticed all of a sudden when I went to the gym, I could stay in the gym a little bit longer. I was putting on a little bit more muscle. And I went, God, I feel way better. Like my life, I can actually start to dream again about what it is I want to do again. Right. And that was arguably like the first big step in my life, because I wouldn't have been able to build another company without going through that process.
Okay. Highway number one fixed.
Check the box.
Yeah.
But then you know what? My doctor said, well, how do you really feel? I said, I feel good. I feel good. You know, I feel like I did, you know, a couple years ago, and I feel like I could run again. He says, do you want to feel better? And I said, you're right. I actually don't feel like I did before, which was like I was a carnivore. I just felt like I would look at something and be able to want to just dig everything into it and put my entire soul into pushing this thing forward. And he said, okay, that's good. He said, that's a very important part of this equation. If you don't feel as good as you want to feel, let's go ahead and now let's switch you from Clomid. And then I went into an exogenous testosterone. First thing though I did is I made sure I stored a bunch of my sperm. Very important that the second you decide to go into exogenous testosterone, you have some of your sperm stored. We'll get into that in a second. So then I went on exogenous testosterone and I went from 400 to 600 and I said, yeah, I feel good. I said, I think I can feel better. Then I went to 900. Mm. And at 900, I actually started feeling a little bit overstimulated. I couldn't concentrate as much. I felt like I'd wake up and I'd just be a little bit probably like uncomfortable in my skin. And then I said, you know what? Because I have access to it, let me see what it's like going to 1200. I went to 1200 and I did it for about a week. And I said, this is not any good for me. So what my doctor and I realized is that for me personally, the perfect number was about 575 to 600. That's where I felt comfortable.
Wow. So it's very individual as well, because
100%.
It takes in behaviorally how you're feeling, but also physiologically, like what are the numbers?
The most important thing you'll hear in this particular science, right, and everyone's different, is that you don't treat the numbers, you treat the person. And you have to remember, right, what people really think is that testosterone is a silver bullet, that when you take it, you start feeling better. That's not the reality. When you take testosterone, you get a little bit more energy back in your life. You get some momentum back in your life. The way that manifests itself in our personality is completely dependent upon the individual. For me, it made me happier and it made me feel like I could work harder. And that's because that's something I actually really enjoy doing a lot. For other people, it may make them give them a little bit more energy, but frankly, it may make them connect with their emotions a little bit better. Mm. It may make them feel like they're sleeping better and that's the most important thing for them. And so whenever someone decides to go on hormone optimization, it is a journey. And what I mean by that is you start it. You take a dose and you take one particular medication and you say, how does that make me feel? And what does that do to my numbers? And let's take a look at both of those things in conjunction. And then what ends up happening is 90 days later, you come back, you take a look at your biomarkers and you think about how you feel and you go, is that the way I want to feel? And then the doctor that you work with has to say, okay, let me turn a couple knobs. Maybe I'll titrate the medication up or down. Maybe I'll remove that medication and add something else. And you really go through this year-long process of what we call dialing in, where you figure out what is the combination of medications that I want to take in order to feel the best. Now, here's the other curveball. There are two other changes that happen. One is your body over time, its ability to naturally produce hormones changes. So it's actually decreasing. So maybe you have to increase your medication. And the other thing is, maybe you decide to live your life differently. Maybe you said, hey, look, initially, I just want to be good enough so I can do a little bit more yard work. And then you go through an enlightenment and you say, you know what? That yard work was easy. I want to go run a marathon. And then you say, if I want to run a marathon, my body's got to be in a slightly different shape. I've got to put more energy in. And then you go back to your doctor and you work with them and say, what is it that we can do so I can make sure I run 26 miles? Very different conversation.
I want to now understand pathway number two. Mm-hmm. What is the damage that can occur and how in terms of structure of the testes and the internal workings?
Okay. So pathway number two, to get a little bit more granular, right? What ends up happening is in your testes, you've got two different sets of cells. One is your Leydig cells. Your Leydig cells actually produce testosterone. Mm. Then you have your Sertoli cells. Your Sertoli cells, when they see testosterone from the Leydig cells, they produce sperm. Mm. Now, what ends up happening is when you take exogenous testosterone, you inject it into your body. Grand Central up top says, hey, look, it feels like there's a lot of extra testosterone in the body. I'm not going to have as many trains run. Mm. What ends up happening then? Fewer trains run down to your testes. Your Leydig cells, they start to atrophy because they're not being used because they don't get that signal from your brain as much. When they stop being used, then your Sertoli cells are not being bathed in testosterone from them, and then your sperm count decreases. And so when you take exogenous testosterone for a long period of time, your natural production of sperm decreases pretty dramatically. And I'll use myself as an example because you should never try saying this thing is without problems. My fiance and I are trying to have children. Do you know how much sperm I have?
I don't know the answer to that. No, we're not that close.
I have zero. I should say I had zero. Quite literally zero. Now, for me, I knew that wasn't a big deal because I was going to take a set of medications to help me naturally produce more sperm. My fiance, you can imagine, when that number comes back from the doctor,
oh yeah,
she's like, Saad, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to be able to have children? This is like arguably one of the most important things in my life.
Yeah.
And so there are a set of medications that I took. I came off the testosterone, mm-hmm. and I took that first medication we talked about called Clomid. Mm-hmm. I took another medication called HCG. Mm-hmm. And because I had a little bit of a more severe case, I also took FSH. Mm-hmm. And those three in combination.
Follicular stimulating hormone.
Yes,
all of that. Okay.
All of it. And I have sperm.
Okay.
Now, the reality is I actually kept sperm frozen in a bank just because I wanted a safeguard against this. Mm. So whenever we'll call it a clinician or a supplier comes to you and says, hey, you should take testosterone, nothing to worry about, that's bullshit.
So then the proper thing to do wouldn't just be to take exogenous testosterone. You'd have to take the whole highway number one and highway number two.
Correct.
Wow. Okay. Very happy that you're producing sperm.
Thank you.
I've said that on this podcast. You know, over X amount. Okay. I'm really happy we're doing that. Now, I actually want to talk about exercise.
Yep.
Okay. And I want to understand, and we won't get into everything, okay, exercise, sleep, nutrition, but you know, we're very fit here on this podcast. We love exercise. We talk mm-hmm. about the benefits of it in terms of brain health. How does exercise, specifically resistance training, help produce testosterone or help with, you know, these two pathways?
The reality is, right, there's a lot of different kind of exercise you can do to naturally increase your testosterone level. You don't want to over-fatigue your body because when you over-fatigue your body and you produce too much cortisol, there's a bunch of downstream impacts that have in order to basically tell your body to stop producing as much testosterone. Now, the things you're supposed to do, heavy compound movements, deadlifts, squats, bench presses. Now, by the way, these are for men. I don't necessarily know what they are for women, But when you do those things, they tell your body to naturally produce more testosterone.
Okay. And then, okay, and that's interesting because with the, we know that through the myokine pathway, that's how through resistance training, the muscle cells produce these muscle-based proteins, which then go into the bloodstream, which then shoot up into the brain. They cross the blood-brain barrier. They have an effect on different areas of the brain. These myokines tell the brain produce more BDNF, which is a growth factor, which creates new brain cells in certain regions. It goes to the frontal lobe and it increases vigilance and executive functions. I'm guessing that there is a specific pathway of when you do resistance training that triggers the hypothalamus to then get on board and say, hey, we need to now stimulate the testes to produce more testosterone.
That sounds right. And I would imagine the hypothalamus tells the pituitary and the pituitary finally kind of excretes. And I would guess it's probably LH.
Yeah. Okay. So we now know that we, you know, because my question was, you know, what should males ought to do in order to optimize their hormones? And I wanted you to start listing off everything. And we know that we should be exercising.
Mm-hmm.
Sleep is a huge component that we're, a lot of us are missing out on, especially here in New York City. And it comes down to both quantity and quality.
Mm-hmm.
But with sleep, I believe that it's during the deep sleep stages, slow wave sleep stages, that is the most important when it comes to hormonal health.
100%.
Okay, let's talk about that.
So the way to kind of think about this, right, is I'm going to kind of maybe give you like a doomsday scenario to a certain extent. Let's say you're not sleeping as well. You don't sleep as well. Your body doesn't necessarily go through its natural healing process at night. Now, the way testosterone works is it is highest in the morning, and imagine it's like filling up a tank. And then over the course of your day, you slowly use up that testosterone, where at the night, it is at the lowest that it'll be throughout the day. You go to sleep, you replenish it during deep sleep, and then you wake up with a full tank the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
If you are drinking, if you are doing drugs and you do not have high quality deep sleep, or maybe you're just even too anxious, what ends up happening is that tank is not full in the morning. So now if it happens for 1 or 2 days, not a big deal. But let's actually think about what happens when you don't keep that tank full for weeks or months at a time, right? You can't go about your day. You can't do everything you're supposed to do. Start gaining weight. Once you start gaining weight, then inflammation sets in. Once inflammation sets in, you know it's basically your body sending out this loud signal to the rest of it saying, hey, something is wrong with me. The second you're there, all of a sudden you have the foundation for long-term comorbidities, right? Cardiovascular disease, dementia, diabetes. And once those things set in, then all of a sudden you are in a pretty scary place. And so what we always tell our folks is, right, make sure you're optimizing your life and you are taking care of yourself during the day. So literally the single biggest foundational piece of this is so your sleep is optimized and you wake up feeling refreshed in the morning.
Yeah. I wonder if males start to see a decline once they actually become fathers. Because it's, you lose a lot of sleep. And, you know, I work with a lot of high level executives as well as athletes. And something that they're saying, you know, there's, I've got 38 year olds, 40 year olds, they're like, Louisa, I've got two kids under the age of three. I don't sleep. You want me to exercise and I can't exercise. So I can imagine the ripple effects of that, of being a new father.
The number of conversations I have with my friends, actually, let me use data. When we take a look at testosterone levels of single men in their 40s, and let's say they're low, let's say they're 280 to 300 nanograms per deciliter whenever we decide to put a guy on treatment. And then we take a look at men that have children, more importantly, new children, we'll call it between the ages of 1 and 5, right when they kind of need a little bit more help from you. Those men have testosterone levels that are almost 50 points lower. And in large part, it comes from one very simple thing. I don't have enough time in my day, but I am not sleeping. Now, what would be really interesting, and I bet you we could do this, is taking a look at men who have children that are 0 to 1 years of age and taking a look at their testosterone levels. Because if I had a bet, I would imagine if I had to bet, and it's because they're actually helping their wife or their partner and they don't have someone else that's helping, they would have much lower testosterone levels.
Wow. That would be such an interesting study to do.
Easy to do.
Yeah. What about, okay, now I want to understand what's going to happen over the next 10 years as it relates to hormone therapy and testosterone therapy. So why don't you give us a brief history of that and tell us where you think it's going to be in the next 5-10 years.
All right. This is really exciting just because there was some new clinical evidence that was recently released that I think actually paves the way for where we go in the future. But let's go back to 2000. So the year 2000, testosterone as an industry, $400 million a year. So then there were a bunch of guys that sat around at a pharmaceutical company, and I know exactly how this was done because I used to do this for atypical antipsychotics at Eli Lilly. But they said, let's manufacture the low T craze. And so they came up with this concept of low T, and then you take these gobs of pharma money, and then you start spending them on direct-to-consumer advertising on television, right? Now, all of a sudden, from 2000 to 2011, testosterone sales went from $400 million to $4.4 billion a year. Then around 2011, 2012, what they started noticing is that there was a lot of cardiovascular events. And then the FDA came in and said, we're going to throw a black box warning on testosterone. It went from $4.4 billion to $2.2 billion virtually overnight. And then you saw all of these legal entities come across and say, if you were taking testosterone and had a cardiovascular event, you may be eligible for a class action lawsuit. Let's get you paid. Now, you can imagine as a clinician, when that happens, all of a sudden you say, I don't want that liability on my hands. Now, what actually happened? Two things. When you have pharmaceutical companies spending that much money and you have your reps going into their office and they're just handing out packets of free testosterone, this is like the Viagra days, right? They're just filling your shelves full of them. The physicians then basically said, you know what? I'm not even going to do the testing. I'm just going to say, hey, man, how are you feeling? Oh, you're feeling tired in your 40s? Take this testosterone. Now, what we actually know is when you give testosterone to men that don't deserve it or don't have a clinical need for it, they start having some side effects. True statement.
What are they?
So one is theoretically, not theoretically. There's something called hematocrit. That is a total amount of red blood cells you have in your body. When you take testosterone, your hematocrit levels increase for about 15 to 20% of the population. I'm one of those guys. When my hematocrit levels increase, and everyone feels it slightly differently, for me, it feels like there's pressure behind my head. And then on top of it too, it feels like my brain runs a little bit slower. And I can actually tell exactly when it happens. When that happens, you're supposed to do something called a therapeutic phlebotomy, which is just a really fancy word for saying, I need to donate some blood.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, for a lot of guys that shouldn't be taking it and your hematocrit levels go up a little bit too high, some guys, they won't even feel a difference. But another group of guys, they may have high hematocrit levels. You could theoretically, if you're having an operation, you could be more prone to bleeding out. Mm. On top of it too, it could put you at a higher risk for having a stroke or a blood clot. And so you've got to monitor those numbers really carefully. But also more importantly too, if you are taking it, there was prior research that basically showed for some group of men over the first 90 days of taking it, the incidence of cardiovascular events actually increases in that time. Now, what basically happened is these physicians are throwing these testosterone packets to everyone. So of course, if you're not testing these men to see if they should have it, what you're finding is that there is an increased level of some kind of side effect, not necessarily a cardiovascular risk, but some kind of side effect.
Is this the same as illicit drugs where there's a street, you know, there's somebody selling them on the side of the street and...
I guess in theory, mm-hmm. in theory, it's the same, but there's actually probably also a little bit of a slightly different twist. And I'll tell you okay. what I mean by that. So generally, when we do TRT in a clinical setting, you are giving someone 50 to 100 milligrams per week. If you are probably getting it from a basement pharmacist and you're saying, I want to do quote unquote a cycle illegally so I can get big and look better, you're probably taking 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams per week. So, right, it's just a whole lot more that you end up taking. So that's, I would say, the one distinction. But you're right. At that level, when the physicians are just had their sample closets just filled with testosterone, oh, you don't feel well? I got this thing for you, buddy. Take it. So then what ends up happening, right? Testosterone sales go from $4.4 to $2.2 billion. Black box warning comes on. So then the research community started looking at that study and they basically said, hey, look, the studies you were looking at were looking at people that were more likely to have cardiovascular events and it was powered wrong. And so then the FDA basically says, you're right. Let me actually pull the black box warning off of that. Now, what ends up happening though, because physicians are taught not to prescribe testosterone at that point in time because it could result in a higher legal problem or action, all of a sudden medical colleges or universities are saying, hey, you shouldn't prescribe this. You shouldn't prescribe it. And you vilify it and you demonize it. Now, what ended up happening too is when that study ended up getting pushed out, there was another study that began called the Traverse Trials. And the Traverse Trials basically said, let me take two groups of people. Let me take a group of men that have had prior cardiovascular events, and let me take a group of men that are at risk to have a cardiovascular event. And then let me prescribe both of them, one a placebo, and then another a testosterone-based gel, and let me follow them for a long period of time. So that happened for several years. The results from that study just came out 3 weeks ago. What they basically showed is that if you got the placebo versus you got the actual testosterone-based gel, it did not change your likelihood to have a cardiovascular event. Mm. Right? That is a huge piece of information.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other thing that ended up happening is there were hundreds of studies conducted. And what it basically showed is for men that are hypogonadal and have a clinical need for testosterone, if they take testosterone, they have fewer comorbidities and they have a longer likelihood to live. So all of a sudden, they have less diabetes, less cardiovascular disease, less dementia. And now all of a sudden, the research community is saying, whoa, whoa, this thing is actually really valuable if it's taken by the right group of patients. Now, going back to where are we going to be 10 years from now? This is the exciting part, right? It has been highly stigmatized. It has been frowned upon by the medical community. And now all of a sudden, this peer-reviewed, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial information that's happened longitudinally over a long period of time is coming out and saying, hey, look, it's actually good for a group of patients, and it doesn't cause that many side effects. The key there, good for a group of patients. It doesn't mean every man should take this. Don't race out to your doctor and say, I feel a little bit tired. I should go get on testosterone. It should be, let me do a deep workup, both first of my lifestyle, of my biomarkers, and my symptoms. And if all those things line up and say I should try something like a testosterone-based optimization therapy, then do it under with a physician that can continuously check you and monitor you every 90 days. They're not doing it that often. It means they're probably actually trying to cut corners. So 10 years from now to what I think happens, I think there's two things that are really important happening right now. The first is we have this global epidemic, and so you now have a tremendous amount of education about, guys, this is a real problem. Like, you need to fix this thing because you don't want to feel like I did when I was in my 30s. That's the first thing. The other thing that's happening is what we're realizing is we're beginning to live a little bit longer with all the medical technologies and advances that are in play. And on top of it, too, we've watched our parents go through chronic problems. Like, I saw my father, I don't know, I mean, I can imagine a lot of your listeners have seen their parents go through diabetes, dementia, right? And once you see that, it terrifies you. And then on top of it too, we've probably seen a bunch of people around us live much healthier lives. And so now the narrative's changing. You're basically saying, I'm going to live a little bit longer. I don't want to go the same way my parents did. I'm starting to feel a little bit worse earlier on. And I see people around me whose lives have completely changed. And God, and when they're in their 40s or 50s, they look like they're in their late 20s or early 30s. And now all of a sudden there is this movement to basically say, I don't have to live that way. And I think what you're beginning to see is not only with testosterone, but we'll call it other optimization-based therapies, weight loss therapies, thyroid therapies. If you have a physician that can look at the whole picture, you're saying, not me. I want to make sure that I can feel better and increase my health span as I get older, which is why you see these 90-year-old people quite literally running marathons today. Yeah. It's because they've been taking care of themselves for years.
Wow. I very much hope that, you know, we start to understand as a society, you know, men as well, you know, what the clinical use is, the clinical benefits of taking testosterone and really optimizing your hormones through that aspect, but not So just that. But I think there's a stigma around it. I think we need to really, you know, put our heads together and figure out how can we tell the world that testosterone is something that is going to make you feel better, give you more energy, increase libido, and increase fertility mm-hmm. as well. I think that that's amazing. I was talking to my mum about this episode. You know, my mum doesn't mm-hmm. really understand much about this, but she said, ask him, is this, you know, what the difference is? Well, she didn't really say this, but I'd like for you to define this. People often, you know, if you say I'm taking testosterone, they think you're just taking steroids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what is the difference?
Well,
you're talking to my mother here.
Well, I'd say Mama Nicola. The reality is testosterone is a steroid and you are taking steroids. But the truth of the matter is you're taking 5 to 10% of what someone who is abusing it would be taking in a controlled clinical setting. And we are closely monitoring all your biomarkers to make sure that you are actually progressing the way you should. And the more important thing is we're actually just replacing something in your body that it naturally produces as you get older.
So what these, I don't know if you saw just recently, I think his name is Joe.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, what was his last name?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I know exactly.
30-year-old male, for those of you who don't know. Yeah. Blonde guy, 30-year-old male. He, I think it was an aneurysm. He died instantly, but he was renowned for taking steroids, correct? To get bigger. He was a bodybuilder. Now, I know a lot of people have seen these bodybuilders, mm-hmm. you know, online. They're huge. Are they taking testosterone?
Plus, 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 plus.
Okay, plus growth hormone, plus other things as well.
Let me give you a great example, right? So we prescribe guys 50, 100 milligrams per week, maybe 150 if you're, you know, probably a little bit on the bigger side. A guy like that, so when you do test, when you do a steroid cycle, you, and I'll give you a crazy version of one. Let's say you're doing a 3-month cycle. You're going to take something like Anadrol. Anadrol is going to increase your overall weight by 25 pounds in like 3 weeks if you're taking a heavy dose of it. On top of it too, you're probably doing something like D-ball. And then you're also doing something like DECA and you're doing testosterone and you're basically doing that for 2.5 months in larger doses over the course of those 2.5 months. And then you're going to stop your cycle. Maybe you're on like 7 different medications in reality. And then you're like, hey, look, I've bulked up a lot. Now I need to actually come off all those medications and I need to cut down or shred for a competition. And then you may take something like Anavar, clenbuterol, and on top of it too,
Clen
is like, it's just like in a fat incinerator.
Yeah, it is. It's isn't it a horse tranquilizer? No, not a tranquilizer. Sorry, they give Clen to horses to make them lose weight prior to a race.
That makes sense. But what it basically does is increases the temperature of your body. So when I say it's a fat incinerator, like you were quite literally increasing your temperature and burning off fat, right? So imagine, right, all of a sudden you're forcing your body to put on 20 to 25 pounds over 2 months using six different medications, many of which that aren't meant for humans. Mm. And then all of a sudden you're like, all right, listen, I'm going to stop taking those. Now I want to pull off all the fat and as quickly as I can and go from what's probably a 20% body fat to like 6%. And so that is the other side of it. So then you're going to start decreasing your caloric intake. You start increasing your cardio. So you're pushing your heart even harder in all of this new vasculature that you've developed in what is probably stiffening arteries.
Angiogenesis.
There's a lot of bad things that are going to happen. And so in general, what you find is that bodybuilders very often don't live that much longer. It's because God bless them because they do this for sport. They put their body through it's a lot of strain.
Mm. That is wild. And you're now educating people and through your amazing company, Herd Health, which you are the co-founder of, you're now teaching people and helping them with optimizing their hormones.
That's correct.
Through a subscription.
service. That is correct.
Okay. So what do people do? They come, you know, they sign up and they go and get a blood test, and then you guys, through your algorithms, and obviously there's physicians on board, you figure out, okay, John Smith came in 35 years old. He wants to optimize for better health. He wants to have kids in the next, you know, 4 or 5 years. So then you figure out what's going wrong and you work with him over a 90-day period or longer, correct?
That's right. Yeah. We do at-home blood tests. Mm-hmm. We then do 30-minute audiovisual consults, which means like this is a real conversation, not just a bunch of conversations over text message. We then actually, this is what kills some people, we turn away about 30% of the patients at that point in time. And it's because we say, if you do not have a clinical need for our medication, we're just not willing to prescribe it to. Like, we are actually very very stringent about patients that only have clinically low testosterone will get provided care through us. Now, we've got other longevity meds they can get. We're moving out into weight loss and thyroid care. But the reality is you have to make sure you are doing it in the single safest manner, because you don't want to harm any of your patients. And a lot of patients too, they get a ton of information on social media. Their friends are taking it. Everyone wants to feel good. They want to get more swole or look better for the summer. And we said, that's not the guy we're serving for right now.
Wow.
And then we basically say, we'll treat you. And then at the 90-day mark, you've got to do another blood test. You've got to see another doctor. And if you don't, you can't continue to get medication from us. And we do that every 90 days in perpetuity, because you really need a real partner in this thing. Because to our prior point, this is not like a simple, let me take a Tylenol. This is a real commitment you're making, and very often for your life, right? This is a chronic disease, just like diabetes, and you need a provider by your side the whole time.
100%. I'm going to close off with one more question.
Okay.
Does red light therapy, shining it on your testicles, really increase the production of testosterone?
So here's when you look at the studies, so there's two sides of this, right? There's the first side, which is what people will tell you online and on social. And there are studies. And the thing is, right, there are studies that show you, yes, it does increase it a little bit. But the majority of studies show like that's not the thing that's actually really going to move the needle per se. So you shouldn't go buy yourself a Juve and sit on your back and shine it on yourself every single morning. Does it help? Yeah. But is it really going to be the thing that moves the needle? Probably not.
Not as much as proper nutrition, hydration, sunlight, exercise, sleep.
Yes.
And most importantly, something that I'm speaking a lot about now, social relationships.
Oh my God.
Huge thing that we're missing in academic research, and hopefully one day we'll see an RCT done on this.
But I mean, it's almost like what you begin to see, and right, there are pockets now that are forming that show that people who live longer, what's the single biggest contributor to their length is social relationships. Mm-hmm. If you have more social relationships.
And that doesn't mean romantic. That doesn't mean a life partner per se.
It means community.
Community.
It means community. If you have community, you're happier. You tend not to internalize stress as much. And just being able to kind of share your life with other people helps you live longer. Now, there is very interesting research actually coming out. I saw Scott Galloway actually just speak about it the other day. But they basically take a look at younger men right now in the country. And what they find is that younger men in the country are less likely to have real relationships. And because they have fewer relationships, they actually, and when I mean fewer relationships, I'll even say friends, other people that they're just hanging out with, and romantic relationships, they may be theorizing that is also contributing to much lower testosterone levels in younger men, like 15 to 20-year-olds, because they say, look, they're sitting on their phones, there's more isolation.
Playing Fortnite? Don't ask me how I know what that is.
Don't get me started on it. And I know my brother is going to hate me for saying it, but like, God, get off the fucking games.
Yeah.
Like, stop, get out, go meet people. And right. And the other thing too is when you look at dating apps, what's interesting is there's like a bimodal distribution of people that actually have success with dating apps and a large majority of them that don't. And so when you can't meet someone in the real world, you can't meet someone in a dating app, what's the thing you do? You go into yourself and you spend more time online. And that turns into like a very weird place, because you tend to just say like, hey, I don't need to do anything. I actually have found comfort and solace in kind of like an online group of friends or by myself to a certain extent. And theoretically, that could actually be one of the reasons why there's an even larger problem looming that we haven't really begun to understand yet.
Damn. Saad, this has been one of the best crash courses on testosterone that I've ever had.
All right. Well, listen, yeah. I am a wealth of information, and I'm grateful for being here.
What if people want to sign up to this service? Where can we find out more about you and Hone?
So it's Hone Health. Honehealth.com is the easiest place to go look for it. Right now, we are solely serving men. January, we'll be opening up our doors to women as well, too, which we're so excited about, just because we think that women will actually be much better customers.
I'm so excited.
Hold on. Women are so much more in tune with their bodies. They're so much more compliant. They're so much more excited about care. So we can't wait till we actually move into women. And then they can find me. I'm on Instagram at msaadalam. And then also, if you just want to email me directly, and you can put this in the show notes, it's salam@honehealth.com.
Saad Alam, thank you so much for being part of the Neuro Experience podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.